Well, first off, you've spent a fair amount of time examining the Revolutionary War era here in the First State. Is there a particular reason you decided now is the time for a more comprehensive book like this one on the subject?
When I moved to the Hale Burns House, which was a Quaker home that was the site of a council of war in the American Revolution, I thought that doesn't quite jive with what I knew, right? But we came here into this house in 2008, and I started to read everything I could, trying to piece together this mystery. And what I found out was that every book I read said basically the same thing. They said the British came to the head of Elk, and a few days later they fought in Chad's Ford. And so I just sort of thought, well, beam me up, Scotty. How'd they get there? And so I've been taking notes on everything for a long time, since 2008 when I came to Hale Burns House. And I've been writing a lot of articles for Journal of American Revolution, which is an easy, and they have an annual hard copy publication that they put out with the top articles for each year. So it's been fun, and I've learned a lot. But I was surprised to get a call from History Press asking, would I write this book? So I said, why, yes, I will, no problem. And so here we are with a book.
And you tell much of the story through the eyes of average, ordinary citizens who are navigating the conflict and the issues of the day. And that's, I guess, somewhat a different perspective than most people hear normally. Did you kind of almost have to go to these sources that provided this view from ordinary citizens to get the story at the state during the Revolutionary War?
Well, I'm really interested in it because I came from upstate New York, where I was in 4-H from the time I was 9 until I was 21. A 4-H district is 3 counties, so you know, according to my personal background, you can do anything in a size of a 4-H district. So I was really intrigued when I moved here to discover such a small state, and that the people here, we were the lower 3 counties of Pennsylvania down here. And the idea that people would be sitting in Newcastle looking out the window at British warships patrolling the river long before the Declaration of Independence was signed, why would they ever think of making a place the size of a 4-H district in my life a state when the eastern border is the river? To me, that's crazy, right? So it made sense to me that there were a third that were passionately for freedom, a third who were absolutely horrified at the idea, and a third, a lot of Quakers and other people. Mostly they just wanted to be left alone. They don't care. As long as their families are okay and they're not violating their religious principles of not killing anybody, well, that made sense. But this past election year, with all of the craziness and all of the mouthiness, I kind of intuitively understanding that mentality more this year than ever before, because people that are perfectly nice, normal friends of mine for 40 years, they're voting for the other candidate. I said, what? So I'm sort of understanding better how people could divide into thirds in that way. And that famous quote by John Adams about, you know, a third were for, a third were against, and a third didn't care. He wasn't actually speaking about the American Revolution. He was speaking about the French Revolution. But it holds true both for our revolution, which preceded the French Revolution, and also for this particular election year. So maybe it's human nature to divide up that way. I don't know. But when people make up their minds, they really mean it, and they don't quite see the other side's perspective.
But and it is going to those stories of average citizens really the only way to kind of get at that story and get at why people were on the different sides that they were, you know, rather than just kind of looking at the larger historical figures that generally tend to get the attention when people talk about the Revolutionary War era?
Yeah, I think so. And the other thing is, because we were the lower 3 counties of Pennsylvania right up until a few days before we signed the Declaration in Newcastle, and then, I mean, agreed to sign the Declaration in Newcastle, and then up in Philadelphia they signed it, we're not really in the history books, because we're more apt to be morphed into things in Delaware's morphed into Pennsylvania history. And before that, we're a part of New Amsterdam, and a lot of our stuff is in Albany. So there's not much information about Delaware because it didn't exist as we know it back then. So the places where things might be found about what happened, they're always about soldiers. Well, you know, soldiers are good and nice, and my own son is in Delaware National Guard, so yeah, that's good. But I'm more interested in everyday people and what happened to them. The places where I found the most information are in things like letters written home, if you can believe it, by British soldiers who were actually horrified by how horrible the British and the Hessians were to the residents of Delaware. What's an odd thing, right? There's a lot of stuff in British letters, British journals, British diaries. There's also a fair amount in Hessian journals. So we get a different sense of what's going on here by looking in other people's papers, not in other textbooks. So it interests me, and I think you find stuff in Quaker Book of Sufferings. They weren't allowed to fight. They weren't allowed to charge for stuff like 600 bales of hay that were taken away from a farm right up the street here. But they were allowed and encouraged by the Friends meeting to keep track of things. So we see in this Book of Sufferings, you know, a desk was taken out of the Hale Burns house, 600 bales of hay were taken from William Marshall's house. So you get a different sense of what the war was really like by looking at what happened to real people and what they said about it, but also what these foreign soldiers said about it.
And I suppose Delaware in some ways is the perfect place to tell the story. Geographically, it was kind of in the middle of everything, and it had, as you mentioned, the kind of mixed loyalties that were a very real thing during this period. So in some ways, do you get a very authentic feel for what was going on by looking at Delaware in this way?
I think so. My own ancestors were New Englanders, and they, of course, were passionate patriots, but some of them came into upstate New York. I grew up just north of Binghamton. They came into that area as Revolutionary War land grants. And so I'm also a child of the bicentennial. So to me, you know, the typical American perspective on the American Revolution has always been rah, rah, 4th of July, and yeah, let's go. And so this was a really thought-provoking thing to study, to look at what else happened, because my ancestors, I have a whole bunch that fought in the Revolution, and they never thought it was wrong. So it's very interesting to me to be looking at it down here. And part of what's different down here is a large Quaker population. We were the lower three counties of Pennsylvania. Pencader 100 actually was part of William Penn's Quaker settlement. So the whole story of the Quakers makes that third that wanted to be left alone very, very real. And here at Hale Burns' house, where Daniel Burns was actually clerk of Wilmington Friends Meeting and started the White Clay Creek Friends Meeting, it's really dramatic, because every time there's a knock on my door, I remember that 3 days after the Battle of Cooch's Bridge, somebody from George Washington's staff knocked on this door and said, "So, Mr. Pacifist Quaker, sir, at 5 o'clock tonight, we are having a council of war at your house. See you around. What do you do?"
You've mentioned a couple of times that Delaware was the lower three counties of Pennsylvania, and I guess a lot of people don't really realize that as the colonies were separating from England and declaring independence, Delaware was separating from Pennsylvania. And that does add kind of another layer of interest and intrigue and story to this whole era for the first state.
Yeah. So when they're making their decision, it was in Newcastle, Old Newcastle Courthouse Museum today is what we call it. But there were delegates from the three counties coming together, and they're saying, "We're not just going to break away from England like Continental Congress has suggested. We're also going to break away from the governance of William Penn's family." So to make that decision, pretty gutsy, really, when you think about the Liverpool and the Roebuck were two British warships that had been patrolling since the beginning of time, almost, since 1773. They don't decide to break away till 1776. And the people here knew those are British ships patrolling to see what we're up to check on things. And we did belong to Britain. It was their right, probably their obligation, to patrol and make sure things were peaceful.
That was one of the things I also thought was interesting about the book when I was reading it, that you really did bring to the fore the role of the Delaware River and that constant tug of war over the river and what ships were where and doing what. I think that's also maybe a piece of this that's often overlooked, that people don't realize just how persistent that was on the water for people living in that time.
Well, and how scary it was, really. All we hear about in school, they talk about the Battle of Cooch's Bridge, partly because Ned Cooch was so wonderful and he so truly loved his family and the properties that he was a good promoter of that story. But actually, there's the story of North and South. Those ships were coming into Cape Henelopen, and there's an alert system. So there are posts, even from, you know, Miss Billion and up to Port Penn, Reedy Point, all the way Claymont, Marcus Hook border, into Philadelphia. So Paul Revere is not the only rider of the American Revolution. He's just the only one we know, right? Mm-hmm. There are a whole bunch of them. And in Delaware, Henry Fisher, who was a lighthouse keeper in Cape Henelopen, he worked with Continental Congress to establish this system of riders riding up along the river to get the word to Continental Congress in Philadelphia. So places like Port Penn are really important to this story. And the job of the river pilots and of Henry Fisher down here, they're important to more than just Delaware. They're more important to New Jersey, to Philadelphia, and even north of there in terms of keeping the action contained.
Were there any other stories or people that you've come across in looking at this period and working on this book that have really stuck with you personally?
John Dickinson didn't just live at John Dickinson Plantation. He had a house in Wilmington, which is now a drugstore, of course, but it's right across from the Grand Opera House. And during the Battle of Brandywine, which was September 11th, 1777, people went up onto the roof of that house, and they were looking out toward the river, and they could hear the cannons going off on ships that were out there in the Delaware River, but they could also hear things going on in Chad's Fort, which kind of is mind-boggling. Apparently the sound of a cannon carries in the air for 40 miles, and we're closer to Chad's Fort than that. So there's descriptions of the people watching the action, hearing the action, sending runners, mostly young men and boys, sending them up Concord Pike to get as close to Chet's Fort as they can to bring back news, because there's no radio, there's no computers, there's no Twitter, there's no any kind of way to find out what's going on except hearing from people. So they were sending up local kids up Concord Pike all the way to Chet's Fort to talk to people and bring the news back to Wilmington to say what was going on. And then the other problem was that people were terrified. After the Battle of Cooch's Bridge, they thought maybe the British would have another fight in Delaware, and they're pretty scared. People were refugees, people like us, just regular people who lived here, going up the road, up Limestone Road, up 896, trying to get away from being in a pincher movement. The British were coming over from Iron Hill, from Glasgow, and Newark, and the Americans were coming from Philadelphia, down Philadelphia Pike and up Maryland Avenue. So if you had not already left, you're, you know, a handful of rural people, between 26,000 men who are fighting each other. It's very scary. So fathers loaded up their farm wagons and their kids and their wives and their food, and they left. So there's a flood of refugees going north, trying to get to Lancaster to get out of the way of these two contending armies. And there's a lot of anecdotes and a lot of family stories that I found that talk about seeing these refugees, being one of these refugees, all this kind of stuff that we don't think about. So it interests me from the level of just ordinary people.
I do want to ask you, Delaware's still developing. National Park is dedicated in a lot of ways to this colonial era leading up to America's independence. Are you hopeful that more of the stories in this book will be told as that park grows and more fully develops and starts to avoid maybe dig a little bit deeper into these stories?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was the national chairman of W3R, the mm-hmm. Washington Rochambeau Revolutionary Route, which is really the Yorktown campaign of the American Revolution. And I was actually the one that lobbied Congress to say, we think that the W3R, that this should be a national historic trail. And so today it is. It's a public-private partnership with the Park Service. So Delawareans and people in all nine states, from Rhode Island to D.C., and then down to Yorktown, Virginia, doing a lot of the work to get this word out, to celebrate it. So way back in 2006, when Ned Kuch was all alive, we had a beautiful reception and celebration of that anniversary of what happened in 1781 with French American Allied soldiers marching from Rhode Island to Yorktown. And that was awesome. And then this coming year, 2017, is an anniversary of the Philadelphia campaign, which preceded that. It was 1777. So there'll be more opportunities to tell these stories in the new year.